If you're coming to eat. Hi, everyone. Good evening, and welcome to another edition of Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber from the PNC studio at Hallis Hall. Zach Seidman, joined by 85 Bear Tom Thayer, and pleased to be joined. I believe he's a first-time guest on our show here, Bears All Access. That would be defensive lineman Mitch Unrein. Can I call you more than just a defensive lineman? Because last year we saw you play a little bit. You were the fridge last year.
He's the only two-way player on the Bears.
I wouldn't say I'm the fridge, but I'm the mini fridge, you know.
You bring it to your college corner, dorm, right? Exactly. But he did play a little fullback last year. But your forte, obviously, is the defensive side of the ball. But before we get to the football, I wish people could have heard the conversation leading up to this show during the break here. You and Tom Thayer were breaking down dogs.
We were, yeah. We both have French bulldogs, and they're the greatest dog in the world, I think.
Well, you know, I knew the reason I knew you had one is because Will Sutton has one also.
Yep.
And I kind of we were all having a conversation and got kind of caught in the mix of comparing each other's French bulldogs. And I have Ernie, who's 4 years old, and
I have Magnus. Yeah, we named him after actually Magnus Vermagnuson, the world's strongest
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a little ball of muscle, man.
He's not a hunting dog.
Not at all. Not a hunting dog at all.
Man, you should see the traps on that dog. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
That dog could probably be a better fullback than it could be a defensive lineman.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Hey, have you ever seen any of the highlights of Fridge as a fullback?
Just the ones on like NFL Network and stuff, right, when he, you know, they would show the 85 Bears and that season, everything like that. But I haven't actually watched like game film. I don't know if they still have that here or whatnot, but I would like to see him actually run and throw some blocks on the cut-ups that they have here.
You know, he caught a touchdown pass. He did run some touchdowns in, but his blocks were blow-ups.
Yeah.
I mean, you think of, you know, you're a defensive lineman. You go in there, and now you're playing against the defensive front.
Yeah.
And that's a lasting impression when you go in there and you blow up a fellow defensive end, outside linebacker, interior linebacker.
Oh, for sure, and it's fun. I mean, when you're a defensive guy and you get to go play on offense and you're like, hey, I can play both ways, and I can go and hit you, you know, which usually we're the ones that are hitting people, you know, being a defensive guy. And to kind of take that mentality to the offense, and you're a fullback, and you get to run full speed. You don't have to read any keys, really. You just run at full speed. They're like, hey, run to this spot. If anyone's there, make a hole.
Well, you know, it's funny. On Fridays when we'd go over short yardage and goal line, there would be that big hesitation in practice when we'd have to call Fridge down from the defense. Do you go through the same thing?
Yeah, we usually start off with the walkthrough, and I just start off with the offense right away. And so by the time I do that, then I have to run about 100 yards over to the defense and then run our goal line plays. So it's really cool to be able to run some offensive plays. And, you know, my history has been in Denver. My kind of claim to fame is when I caught a touchdown pass from Peyton Manning. So, you know, never in a million years did I think I was going to get to play offense in the NFL. And for me to be able to say I caught a touchdown pass is pretty cool.
Right. How did they identify you as having the ability?
You know what? Actually, it was a tight end coach in Denver. He actually coached at University of Wyoming before I was there. And so we kind of had that bond there, the Wyoming bond. And he one day came up to me. He's like, hey, do you think you could lead block in goal line situations? And obviously, you know, being a hardworking kid and stuff like that, I was like, yeah, sure, I can do whatever you want me to do, you know. If they ask me to do anything, I'm like all about it, you know. So
I agree.
We started running some plays in practice, and then they finally called a play against the Saints, I believe, and I led block for Willis McGahee. He got a touchdown. And then, you know, it kind of blossomed from there. Then a couple weeks later, they asked me if I could catch, which I blatantly lied to them. I said, yes, of course I can, you know, which I'd never caught a pass, I don't think, ever. You know, all through middle school, high school, college, never caught a pass. And so, you know, I just had that confidence, and I caught everything in practice. And so it worked out. You know, I didn't know if the stars aligned for me or whatnot, but everything worked out. And they called that play. They called the pass play. I think I know the date, you know, because it's such a big moment of my life. It was December 2nd, 2012. And it was Peyton Manning's 426th touchdown pass. So I have some stats there, which I know by heart.
One more question. Was your name involved in the terminology of the play?
The only thing that they really called out was the actual package. And they called it the Cowboy Package because I played at the University of Wyoming.
Right.
So that's the only thing that really, associated with. So whenever they call cowboy, cowboy, I knew it was my time. I would run out there. And I remember it was the first drive of that game, and I was not expecting them to call that on the first drive. You know, usually.
That was pretty gutsy.
Yeah, it's very gutsy. You know, we were playing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and John Fox, he thought it'd be a good idea to, you know, run that play right there, and they were not expecting it at all.
I can't even imagine. Were you nervous in practice with Peyton Manning? Because if it doesn't work in practice, there's no way they're trying it in the game.
Yeah, if I'd have dropped one pass in practice, I know I was done. They weren't going to throw me the ball. But, you know, I never really got nervous, you know, because I feel like I didn't have anything to lose. I'm like, no one really expects a D lineman to go in there and have great hands anyway. So it was kind of a win-win for me. So if I would go out there and drop one, people kind of, oh, well, he's a D lineman. But if I went out there and caught them all, everyone's like, wow, this guy can catch, you know. So he lived up to all his talk that he was telling us that he could catch. So it worked out. And, you know, I really didn't have time to get nervous during the game because I wasn't expecting them to call it. And by the time you get the call in the huddle and you have a split second to line up pretty much, it feels like for me at least, and then I'm running the route.
And Peyton Manning's so smart. He knows that, wow, they're not going to expect Mitch Unrein to be my lead receiver. And then it kind of builds his profile even a little more, allowing you to, you know, be the recipient of one of Peyton Manning's, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL.
Man,
you catch a touchdown.
Yeah.
I mean, it is just – it's something that you'd be talking about 15 years after you retire.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'd never thought in a million years, like I said before, that I'd have an opportunity to catch a touchdown pass, let alone Peyton Manning.
Right.
I mean, that's what even I think is the icing on the cake, as they say. You know, just to catch it from a first ballot Hall of Famer like him.
Too bad he didn't stay in the league. He could have got an interception from him.
I know, and you know, the funny thing was, too bad we didn't play him last, because he didn't play
right,
in the game.
Osweiler
right.
played.
Brock Osweiler played, so I was hoping I would have been the first ever to catch a touchdown pass from him and get a sack on him, but that never really happened. So
it would have been awesome to get the touchdown and a pick six somehow.
Yeah, somehow get a pick six or something like that. That would have been really cool.
Now, he's known for writing handwritten notes. Did he thank you via a note? Did he call you up like thinking of plays at like 3 in the morning the way he
No. Well, usually I only had like 4 or 5 plays, so I don't think that was at the top of his list of worries for that week. You know, he has a lot of other plays to worry about.
Our executive producer, Greg Miller, is telling me I have to go to the break. But before we do, can you explain the Omaha thing? Because now that he's retired, not giving anything away.
You know what? I mean, So he really didn't call that much in the goal line situations, but I asked other old linemen, like, what does that mean? They're like, it can mean something, a check or something like that, or it could mean nothing. So I really couldn't – I can't tell you exactly what it means, but he used to use that a lot, that's for sure.
We've got Mitch Unrein, the Bears defensive lineman, as our guest for the entire hour. A very difficult day at Hallis Hall. We'll explain next with the Bears defensive lineman, Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer, Mitch Unrein with you on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Radio. Either the next two Bears home games, check out the Miller Lite Chicago Bears Ultimate Tailgate, brought to you by Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, starting 2.5 hours before kickoff, right outside of Soldier Field. Mitch Unrein, the Bears defensive lineman, is our guest here on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber here from the PNC studio at Hallis Hall. Zach Zaidman, 85 Bear, Tom Thayer with you. And the news today coming down that Kevin White, the first-round pick from 2015, going back on IR with another leg injury. And just from being inside the locker room today, Mitch, this one hit the team hard because everyone knows how hard he worked to get back on the field the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely tough. You know, you hate to see such a good guy, a good player. I thought he was really stepping up this year, you know, really came off that injury strong. So it's just really difficult for us as a team to see a guy go down like that. You know, I saw him all last year. We all saw him all last year work his tail off to try to get back. And it's just the way the game goes sometimes, you know. It's one of those things that you kind of have to accept it and move on. But, you know, our thoughts are with him, and he's going to be hanging around. And so I know he'll be there to help the younger guys on.
It's kind of weird because, you know, football, you can console him in the downtime that you have, but you got your preparation for the Indianapolis Colts. And you're not forgetting about Kevin White because you really respect what he's been able to do to come back this year. But he'll be back just as strong when he gets the opportunity to get on the field. And, you know, he's got a bright future about him, and you could see it throughout training camp and up into this point in the season.
Oh, definitely. You know, I thought he was coming along great, you know, during training camp. For him sitting out an entire year and to come right back into the swing of things and have the production that he had right away, I thought that says a lot of all the hard work that he put on in the off season and everything like that. But, you know, this year I'm sure is going to be very tough for him. You know, back-to-back seasons being on IR, that's, you know, luckily, knock on wood, for me, I've never had that issue, never right. been in that, you know, situation. But I could only imagine how just, you know, how hard that would be for you to stay positive. But, you know, he's a happy-go-lucky guy, and I know that he's going to work even harder to come back.
I think the thing that's fascinating to me is the mantra in the NFL. You hear every team talk about it, next man up, every time there's an injury. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at the injury report the last couple of weeks, man, I mean, it's like almost half the team is on that thing. You got 16 guys on it today. Mm-hmm. What's it like on the practice field when, you know, you turn to your left, you turn to your right, there are guys that are being added to the mix that you're probably not used to playing with?
You know, it's one of those things, like you mentioned, it's the next guy up, and that is so true in the NFL because every single week, guys are going down, guys are getting hurt. 100% of the guys in the NFL get injured. It doesn't matter who you are, you know. It might not show up on the injury report, but guys are hurting. You know, it's just the name of the game.
I remember talking to Jarrell Freeman a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things he mentioned was, that's how I got my start. And I'm sure that, that's how it happened for you. Do you remember that moment when you were the next man up?
Oh, for sure. You know, it would happen back, I believe, in 2012. We had Ty Warren. He was a 10-year guy from New England, came into Denver. You know, he tore his tricep, and they were hoping he would come back. And he was, and the first game out, tore it again. So it was just one of those things where I was kind of shoved right in there, and my playing time went from 10 to 15 snaps to 30 to 40 snaps a game. So it's something you always have to be ready for, because one play, literally one play, you can double your snap count.
Well, you talk about mantras in the NFL, and one of them comes from Bill Belichick, and he just says it's simply do your job. Mm-hmm. And that's what the challenge is of everybody. You talk about looking to your right or your left, and it's not always the same guy. But when you're listening to the defense called and you see the offensive personnel, you have a job to do, and that's what Mitch Unrein does. And yep. Will Sutton does his job.
Yeah, exactly.
Akeem Hicks does his. But in this past game, there was back-to-back plays, I think maybe been in the third quarter, when Will Sutton, technically, fundamentally, he makes the perfect play.
Yep.
The very next play, technically, fundamentally, you make the perfect play.
Yep.
And I was thinking, all right, Will has picked up the slack for Eddie Goldman. You know, you and Akeem are playing really solid football. And I was more encouraged when I saw what you guys do in practice, not spill over, but work on the game field. So,
yeah.
You know, that's just part of it. And that's when you get your opportunity to play. Man, just do what you have been practicing.
Exactly. You don't look to left or right and worry about who's out there with you. You worry about doing your job. You know, and I know that the guys behind me, they're going to be doing great. Doesn't matter who it is. You know, we had some young guys step up the past couple of weeks, and they've been playing great. But it's so great to see when things are paying off in practice. You know, how much hard work that we put in during the practice day, during the practice week. You know, Will Sutton, he stepped right in. I thought he had one of the best games of his career last week. You know, there was a couple times me and Akeem went up to him and were like, man, you saved us on that play. Like, for us as a D-line, you know, there were certain times that I might have not been in the right position and the guy was going to hit my gap, and he threw off and made a play. So it's all about working together, you know.
You know, you guys had four guys. You know, four guys to do the work of three different positions out there. I thought the offensive and defensive line played as well as they have any time throughout the season.
Oh, for sure.
In the game this past week. And like you said, you get that positive reinforcement of what you're doing in practice is working in the game. So it's got to be fun not only to watch the tape, but get ready to go to practice today.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you just build confidence. And I think that's the thing that, you know, when we're going out there, we had, you know, in the first couple games, we had one good half or a couple good series here or there, but we weren't putting it all together. And I feel like this last game was the first time we really put it all together. And so hopefully we know what that feels like now, and we can keep on duplicating that week in and week out.
See, Vic Fangio talked about that when he met with the media earlier today, about how there are signs of improvement. And I think people don't see the little things that you see that are being able to take it from the practice field into the game. And it's not just it's the fact that you guys are playing well together and young guys are ascending.
Oh, for sure. And it's all about opportunities. Everyone can play in this league. It's about getting your opportunity and making the most of your opportunity. And I think the way I had a lot of young guys that have already done that, you know, young guys step up, started making plays. You know, there might have been a little bit of a learning curve early on because there's nothing like the first time playing in a real NFL football game. I remember back to the first time I ever actually stepped on the field, and it was actually a Monday night game when I was in Denver. We were playing the Oakland Raiders. I don't even remember like the first three or four plays. Like literally don't even remember a thing about it, what happened. You just kind of run around out there. But then once you finally kind of settle down, relax, get your eyes right, start reading your keys, it slows down.
Well, you know what? You see the interception by Jacoby Glenn. You see the interception by DeAndre Hall. And those are going to be highlighted all across the sports highlight shows all over the world. When you get double teamed, you split a double team, you make a tackle for a 1 yard loss, that's not highlighted.
No.
You know, but technically the ability to do that, I don't think people understand how difficult it is, you know, and so for those of us that get to watch it and watch it repeatedly and are familiar with offensive line and have the respect for that, man, you gotta have great just self-gratification that, you know, what you're doing out there is working and you're able to have those types of plays.
Oh, for sure. I think that it's so hard to explain to somebody that's never played the position on what it's like to take on an NFL double team. I mean, you have two guys that are 330 pounds, you know, coming at you at the same time. And at the end of the day, it's all technique. I mean,
right.
That's something that I've hung my hat on, and I think that's something why I've been in the league for so long. You know, I'm not the flashiest guy out there, but I hang my hat on my technique and, like you said earlier, just doing my job.
When you're at home, the snap count, you can't hear it when you're at home. You can hear it on the road. What is it a distraction to you when you can hear it? Because you talk about the two offensive linemen, they're going to attack you because they know the snap count.
Exactly.
You're just reacting when that football's moved on an instant. What do you like? Do you like to hear the snap count or do you not like to hear it?
For me, it really doesn't matter because I'm always in tuned on my guy. I have a certain area on a guy depending on what technique I'm playing. You know, if it's a five, if it's a six technique, if I'm playing a three or a one, I look at, you know, I don't like just looking at the ball because I take my eyes off my guy.
Right.
You know, I might be able to get off the ball a little bit quicker, but my eyes won't be where they need to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
I keep my eyes where they need to be, and I just go off the movement on the offensive lineman. So luckily for me, I haven't had many offsides. So I think that really helps me.
Right.
But sometimes there's some quarterbacks when you're on away games and the crowd is really quiet for them, and they can get you kind of jumping, you know, especially if they've had the same snap count all game and then they switch it up on you.
That guy in Green Bay does a good job of that.
Yeah, he does do a really good job of that. And, you know, we've been watching film, and Andrew Luck looks like he's very good at it too.
Well, we'll discuss that next, coming up with Mitch Unrein, the Bears defensive lineman here on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Tune into the Bears Coaches Show with Jeff Joniak and the Bears coaching staff Monday nights at 6:30 p.m. on WBBM News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM, part of the Chicago Bears network of shows. Zach Zaidman, 85 Bear, Tom Thayer, joined by Bears defensive lineman Mitch Unrein here on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber, here from the PNC studio at Hallis Hall. Bears take on the Colts Sunday, looking for their second straight win. Colts have had some issues, so they're a team that's on the ropes a little bit after that rough trip that they had to London. They come back, no bye week, and then you have to take on Andrew Luck. Now, while they have some issues, you still have to take on Andrew Luck. When you watch this guy on video, what stands out?
You know, just his poise. I mean, he gets a lot of pressure in his face, but he's a strong guy. He gets away from the pressure. He extends plays with his legs, and he can get first down by, you know, running for it. So we have to do a really good job of keeping him contained. I think that's going to be our probably number one issue up front. And they have a good running back too. You know, Frank Gore, he's a veteran guy. He can make plays. So we're going to have to definitely stop the run, get him in obvious passing situations. And when we do that, we need to be conscientious of where he, you know, can run. So we can't just be getting out of our gaps and stuff like that.
Have you played in the London game yet?
I have not. It was actually my rookie year. Denver went over, but I was on practice squad my rookie years, and they didn't take over the practice squad guys, so I didn't get an opportunity to do that.
Well, I mean, those from on the outside looking in, I played in London and went there as a traveling party with the Bears, and they played there a couple years ago. And to us, it'll be interesting to see if jet lag is a factor because they didn't take the bye week after, but you know, and that's not for something for you to worry about. But when you do watch Andrew Luck, you know that he's a super intelligent guy. He's got a great deal of confidence in himself. So it's going to be about what you can do to him to get him out of his flow.
Exactly.
You know, and that's going to be the great challenge because he's a great athlete. He runs with – he's the second leading carrier on their football team. So, you know, he's not afraid to – take the ball down and run. So,
oh, for sure.
You know, it kind of puts a little bit more on the defensive line's shoulders. You can beat your offensive lineman, but now you're in pursuit of the quarterback that's pretty good on his feet.
Yeah, exactly. And he's a tough guy to bring down, too. There's a lot of plays I saw where guys had him wrapped up, or at least they thought they had him wrapped up, and he gets out of there, and, you know, then he's running, extending the play, and can throw the ball, you know, 60 yards downfield. He has a really strong arm. So definitely it's going to be a huge challenge for us up front. You know, we've kind of been hurt in the past couple weeks on third and long when the quarterback gets out of the pocket and he can run for a first down. I believe we had one just this last week when it was a third and 13. You know, Stafford got out of the pocket and ran for a first down. But that's something that is going to be a constant struggle for us through the year, you know, until we stop it altogether. You know, if quarterbacks see that they can run and get out of the pocket, they're going to do so. So we definitely have to clean that up, and that's going to be something that we're going to have to continue to stress and practice.
You're a finely tuned athlete. I mean, a high-level, world-class pro. What about natural grass as opposed to the indoor atmosphere you're going to play in Indianapolis? Do you have a preference of the natural grass to sports turf?
Personally, I like natural grass better. I feel like my body feels better.
Right, I agree.
As much as it can feel after an NFL game, you know, compared to playing on the AstroTurf, or not AstroTurf, but
field turf.
Yeah, the field turf. I just feel like it, you know, hurts my knees a little bit more and stuff like that playing on that. And there was actually some studies I believe we did last year, Coach Fox did, saying that it's about 10% more wear and tear on your body when you practice on that versus the actual grass. So there's some science behind it as well.
That's the major reason, by the way, that the Bears are sticking with natural grass at Soldier Field, for those that keep asking the questions. Why don't they switch to field turf? There you go. You heard from a player. You heard from the head coach telling the player. That tells you what you need to know. Mitch Unrein, our guest here on Bears All Access. Who's the toughest quarterback that you've had the challenge of trying to bring down? Because you talked about how Luck is just a big guy, constantly on the move, strong, not afraid to get hit. Who's the toughest guy that you faced?
Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, that guy is very big. We played him back in 2012 in Denver, and there was a couple times when guys had him wrapped up, man, and he still throws the ball. He had a guy on his legs and another guy around his waist trying to swing him down, and he completed the pass. So that's probably one of the toughest guys. You know, I don't know what he weighs. I would say probably 260, 270. Right. Probably not on the
roster. You could put any
roster.
Jersey number on him and he'd fit it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I feel like he could play D-line, you know, tomorrow if he wanted to. He's that big.
With your opportunity to practice against Peyton Manning, did that help you develop anything? And I brought up the snap count before, but, you know, with his intelligence at the line of scrimmage and going through training camp against him and stuff, is there anything that he helped you learn anything from that experience that maybe would filter over to the other quarterback cadences that you hear?
Peyton was kind of on his own, man. There were so many things that he did, and you couldn't really get on a read on what he was actually trying to say out there. There's some quarterbacks, you know, when he calls out a certain protection, a certain mic and stuff like that, you're like, okay, this is going to be a pass play. You know, if he calls out, usually when I hear an RL word, he comes up to line and checks, that's usually a run to the right or left, usually for normal offenses. But for Peyton, I mean, you could think it was going to be a run and it would end up being a pass. So he was kind of mixing all that kind of stuff up. So it was really hard to get a hold of one thing that he could say that you could really hang your hat on what it was going to be.
I heard one of the best compliments someone has paid you on this Bears team from Eddie Goldman right before the start of the season. You must have heard it, too, when he said, I don't have to think out there. I just listen to what Mitch tells me, what Unrein says, and I do it. How'd you pick up that knack of kind of understanding what an offense is trying to do?
Well, it's one of those things where the more you play, the more you hear things on the field. And then once you see it once in a game, you know, you hear that, you hear what they're saying, you see what happens, and then if they come back and, you know, you hear the same, you know, whatever term that they say or word that they use, then you can kind of play into it a little bit more. But you still have to always read your keys. But that's something that, you know, I've tried to use to help my game out a little bit more.
Because you're almost a coach on the field. I say that because usually after the first series, the coaches come over to you. They'll have a discussion with you in regards to what you're seeing out there, what you're hearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's always about, you know, if you're seeing certain thing, to communicate with everyone else. And that's what we go over to the sideline. You know, the coach asks, hey, are they doing anything that we did, you know, that we didn't see on film or this or that? Did you hear anything that we could say, you know, if they ran a trap play or, for say, you know, just say they ran a trap play or something like that. That's a very difficult play for a defensive lineman to defend against. So if they check something at the line and you hear that, then later in the game, if they try to check to it again, we can play into it.
Last night at the Women's Clinic 101, we were watching a highlight by Akeem Hicks, and it goes back to the cause fumble at the Houston game. And I asked Akeem, I said, did you read the stance of the right guard? Because that is an indicator. You can.
Yeah.
Are you doing that? Are you? Because I know playing against practicing against Steve McMichael and Dan Hampton, man, they would explore every stance of the offensive lineman depending upon the down and distance. Do you have? Do you feel like in that short time frame before they snap the ball that you have that, you know, you can decipher that?
Certain players, yeah. You know, and you can see that on film.
Right.
You know, throughout the whole week, we are watching so much film, and it's so easy to watch film nowadays because they give you an iPad. You can watch it all when you go home all night. So you can watch so much that you can really start looking at the footwork of a guy's toes tilted in or out, if he's running a reach or a scoop, this and that. But you have to be watching your guy because there's certain times where if you're getting the call in very late, you know, you don't have much time to look at the whole thing. But definitely, you know, if you have a tip on a guy, that's what helps so much.
Your wife being a bronze medalist, does she watch tape?
You know,
herself shooting?
yeah, they actually do.
Okay,
they actually do. I mean, not as much as us, of course, but, you know, if she's struggling with something and she's not hitting a certain target, she has somebody come film her, and then she can watch it and let her coach watch it, and they can kind of, you know, tell what she's doing wrong.
Do you ever coach? She ever coach you? Do you ever coach her?
Do I ever coach her? You know, joking around sometimes. I'm like, oh, hey, you missed that one. You need to hit it. You know, stuff right. like that. And she's like, well, no, duh. That's the name, that's the name of the game, right? If you got to hit every target.
His wife is going to take a complete another segment of the show because there's so much to talk about there. But I do, for the record, did you notice, Mitch, that Tom mentioned he was at ladies' night, but all business. Didn't talk about what he saw other than what he saw on tape in regards to football.
Well, it's neat because we do have a section there where we get to have some highlighted plays throughout the season. And with Adrian Amos and Sam Acho and Patrick O'Donnell and Akeem Hicks there, you do get a chance to, you know, spend a couple minutes with each of these plays in educating the women audience there yeah. about things that they may not think about before the ball's ever snapped. And on this particular play, you could see the right guard sitting back in a stance, and Akeem explained how that really helped them, you know, think about the play, where it was going to go, and then he ended up causing a fumble because of it.
Well, coming up next, we're going to take a look at your better half and break down the Olympics and see what it's like, because your family, not just your immediate family with you and your wife, but, you know, your actual family with brothers and cousins. There's so many athletes in your family. We'll finally get the answer to this question.
Like the fourth best in your
family? Yeah, who is the best on Ryan? We'll discuss next on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Join Bears Care in raising funds for programs supporting Chicago area breast cancer patients and their families. Purchase your Real Bears Fans Wear Pink shirt at chicagobears.com/pink. 85 Bear Tom Thayer is here. I'm Zach Zaidman. We are joined by Bears defensive lineman Mitch Unrein here on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber from the PNC studio here at Hallis Hall. And, you know, we were talking during the last segment about trap plays in football. Your wife is a trap shooter. We'll get to that, and we'll explain the difference. But first, when it comes to trap plays, I think the most famous one that at least is in our minds right now because of what happened last week is what John Timu was able to handle last week against the Lions, right?
Right.
Can you explain that?
Well, first of all, you're trying to take an offense is trying to take advantage of an over-aggressive defensive line. If they're killing you, if they're beating you upfield, if you can't block them. So what you do is you give kind of a deception where you let a defensive lineman think he's beating you upfield. Then the offensive lineman from the opposite side of the center, for this the right guard, is going to come and trap block the first man past the center. So the guy that's standing over the left guard, you're going to kind of let him shoot upfield. Now, he thinks that he's won a big play. Then also the right guard is supposed to ear hole him without the recognition. But John Timu was able to kind of pre-think the play so intelligently. With discipline, he stayed behind the line of scrimmage so he didn't get the drawn off sides. The defensive lineman came upfield, but now the linebacker's coming straight up the middle, and the offensive lineman's confused, doesn't know which guy to hit. John Timu makes the play, and it's over. So it is where if a defense or an offensive line's getting beat, if they have a super aggressive defensive line, they just try to take advantage of their aggressiveness upfield.
I wish you could see the smile on Mitch on Rice, because that you won by 3 points, so that was a game-saving play.
Yeah, that was a huge play, and we actually practiced against that play during the week, and you know Vic had a good call on that play as well. And Timu, you know, he's a very instinctive player, like we were talking about earlier about players that can recognize certain formations and call out certain plays that the offense is going to run. You know, John Timu is right up there with the best of them at knowing what a team's going to run in certain situations.
And it doesn't always work, because I can remember back in 1986, we were running a trap play against the Philadelphia Eagles and Jerome Brown, who has passed away since, who was an unbelievable player. And I was supposed to trap him, and he got to the point, and I never hit him, and he made a tackle for a 2-yard loss. So it's not something that's always guaranteed to work. Mm-hmm. It's a play that has to be run efficiently, and it's kind of a hard play to practice because it is dangerous for the defensive lineman. And you know, if you think that you're just going to ear hole your teammate in live scenario and practice, so it's something that if you practice that a defense called against that play and it works out, it's just a great job of coaching during the week.
Wait. What was it like when you went back into the huddle after not hitting your guy?
Oh, it was probably one of them. I was not worried about going to the huddle. I was worried about going to the tapes the next day with Ditka running the projector, because that's when Buddy Ryan was coaching the Eagles.
Oh, man.
And we ended up beating the Eagles that day 13-10, but it was miserable, miserable, miserable. You know, Mitch, how it is. You have a couple bad plays, it keeps you up all night.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there are times after a game where I can't go to sleep until I watch the plays on the iPad. And then, you know, usually, as you know, as being a player, they're not always as bad as you think they are, and they're not always as good as you think they are. So the bad ones, though, that you're just stressing all night, you're like, man, everyone's going to see this in the meeting room. And sure enough, it always seems like on your bad plays, the coach rewinds it about 5 or 6 times. Oh. So you keep on seeing it over and over and over in front of everyone.
That's the thing of being a defensive lineman, you play a 3-4, you're going to see each play at least 6 times.
Yep.
Because they're going to show every one of you guys at least twice, guaranteed.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes 3. So, you know, and that's like the only thing that you see of all the plays.
Yeah, you got to definitely have thick skin in the NFL because, yeah, you're going to have an earful, definitely,
yeah,
if you're a bad play.
There's accountability all the time. And it's funny that you mentioned, because I'm guessing by what you were saying that Vic just rewinds the thing over and over again, because I know Luffy Smith, when he used to be the head coach of the Bears, he'd have that red laser pointer.
Oh, yeah.
And if someone screwed up, he wouldn't say anything. He'd just take that red laser pointer and just constantly circle the number of the guy that wasn't doing what he was supposed to do.
That's almost worse, too. I feel like when no words are said, you're like, oh, man, here we go.
Yeah, players used to talk about that look. He wouldn't yell. He'd just give you that look like you disappointed your dad.
The thing about it is you watch the tape with your coordinator, and then you go into a room and you watch it with your position coach. So you'll get yelled at twice,
once
by the coordinator in front of the whole defense, and then once inside the defense offensive line room just with your guys.
And this after beating yourself up by watching
the night before. Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm sorry, guys. All right, let's change the mood. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk about trap shooting, another thing that is very close to Mitch on Ryan's heart. We'll explain next. It's a well-documented story. So what I want to find out, the stories that we haven't heard about in regards to everything that transpired this summer with your wife, winning a medal at the Olympics. That's next on Bears All Access with Mitch Unrein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Need a ride to or from Bears home games? Download the Uber app and get a safe, reliable ride within minutes. Head to uber.com/app and enter code BEARSFAN to get $15 off your first Uber ride. This is Bears All Access brought to you by Uber from the PNC studio at Hallis Hall. Zach Zaidman, 85 Bear Tom Thayer, and Bears defensive lineman Mitch Unrein, our guest here. We've had a terrific conversation about Mitch, but now we're going to kind of transition to Mitch's wife. And I don't usually do this. Rarely do we talk about the spouse of a player that's on the show. But I think in this case, it warrants that, right? Wouldn't you agree?
She's earned it for sure. Yeah.
Corey Cogdell Unrein is a trap shooter. She's won a number of gold medals now. Not gold medals, but Olympic medals, which is a big deal when you consider all the training that it takes just to be at the top of your sport.
Yeah, it's remarkable the path that she's took from growing up in a small town in Alaska. She went down to Texas and trained, made the USA shooting team, made the Olympic team at a young age, went to the 08 Olympics, got a bronze medal there. She qualified for 2012. Unfortunately, she missed the finals by a couple targets. And then she goes this year and wins another bronze medal. Unfortunately, I didn't get a go.
I mean, did you try to go into John Fox? I remember we talked to you right before it happened, and you said you would try and convince Coach Fox to send you down there.
I don't know if I did a good enough job, obviously, but I definitely went in and talked to him and asked him, you know, he asked, how long does it take to get down there? How many days is it? You know, so I told him all that, and I was going to be gone about 3 days solid. And then with the jet lag, I'd probably miss another day. And then that next day, we were going to have to play our first preseason game. So it was just, it's one of those things where it wasn't going to work out. My wife, she understands that I have, you know, my job here. And I think actually once she got back, she's like, it was a good thing that you didn't have to come down. She said the transportation was crazy getting to the shooting range. She actually had a friend that went down and they had to drop him off like 45 minutes away from the shooting range. Then you had to walk by foot to the shooting range. So you would not have fun walking that much.
I think, when I saw the group of the team Unrein support shirts that they had for all the players, that's the thing that kind of would have got me a little emotional, because you've seen all these guys, all these tough football players, and now they're there supporting your wife for something that's going to be considered one of the top four or five in the world at her sport of choice. Was she exposed to trap shooting because growing up as a hunter, or was she just exposed to it because it became a hobby from where she was from?
You know, she grew up, her dad, you know, started her shooting, being around shooting at a very young age. She said the first time she ever shot a BB gun, she was 3 years old. Her dad used to put it through the fence, the chicken wire, and they'd shoot little cans and stuff like that. So it's always been something that she's liked doing. And then when she got into high school, they had a 4-H program where they could shoot traps, shoot rifles, shoot, you know, different guns and stuff like that. And then she really fell in love with the shotgun shooting sport. And that's when she found out, well, it was an Olympic sport. And after high school, she went down and started training and trying to make the USA shooting team. And then she finally made that. And then the rest is history, as they say.
Where did you watch her perform? Up here. Where did you?
I actually went to Chris Brzezinski's house. And I actually watched it on my phone because I couldn't find it on TV. I didn't think they were going to have it on TV at first, but sure enough, they did have it on TV, which I couldn't find it, but because I was already zoned in on my phone and I didn't want to try to spend time and miss it or something, you know. So we watched it on my phone, and literally every single shot we were, you know, cheering for. And then when the other girl would shoot, we were like, miss, miss, miss. You know, it's one of the most stressful things I've ever watched in my life. You know, I got more nervous for that than I have any football game, because in a football game, I can control what I do. But watching your own wife out there, it's like you can't do anything. You can just sit back and watch and hope for the best. So that's tough. And I'm sure it'll be the same when I have kids.
I remember we were watching it as a family. You know, my mom and dad in their mid-80s, all my brothers and sisters around, and we were watching it, and it captivated our attention. And we are kind of pulling, you know, secretly pulling for you guys, not knowing you that well, not knowing your wife at all, but it. I think that's what it was, the neat thing about it. It captured a lot of people's attention around here and pushed them to enjoy watching it.
And that was so cool. I mean, when random people would say, hey, your wife, you know, she shot great, congratulations. And just the whole football community, to start with, the team, everyone around the team, and then the whole Chicago, you know, city, the city of Chicago. There was one time we were getting ready for a game. I believe it was one of the preseason games. My wife had already won her her medal and everything, and I was getting off the elevator, and this lady came up. She's like, are you a Bears player? I'm like, yeah, I am. She's like, what's your name? I was like, Mitch Hunter. And she's like, you're the husband of the shooter. And I was like, wow, how cool is that, right, to just meet somebody random in Chicago, and they know who your wife is. So it's pretty cool.
I love the fact that that there was much made about the headline that referred to Corey as Mitch Unrein's wife. But you are more the husband of the Olympic medalist.
For sure. Every time we go somewhere and somebody starts talking to me about football, if they know I play, I always try to throw her under the bus. I'm like, oh, well, did you know she's a three-time Olympian, two times bronze medalist? And she kind of just looks at me and rolls her eyes because I'm off the hook, and now she has to talk for the next hour explaining her sport, you know, everything like that. So it's really cool to be competitive, you know, be a competitive couple, because we really understand what it takes to be at the kind of pinnacle of our sports.
How'd you guys meet?
We met on a blind date. So I had a family friend who was dating a friend of hers, and the girl that I knew was dating a friend of hers, and literally the first time the girl met Corey, my wife, she's like, I have the perfect guy for you. And Corey's like, you haven't even really met me, blah, 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 you know. So the girl says, well, he's an NFL football player. And Corey's like, I don't even want to meet him. You know, and the girl's like, he's not a typical NFL guy. You got to give him a chance. And then we went out on a blind date, and we started dating ever since. I mean, we dated for 3.5 years and then, you know, got married. So we've been married over 2 years now.
What's her Olympic future?
You know, she's probably take a couple years off. We're going to probably start trying to have kids in the next year or so. And then she's probably going to want to shoot another Olympics. You know, it's definitely one of those things that she can do for as long as she wants. So she can take off 2 years and then really decide in 2018, and that then she'll start ramping up for another Olympic.
We got to organize some type of charity shoot at one of the venues around here and have your wife and you spearhead it, and have all of us who grew up around it go out there and shoot.
That would be awesome. Yeah, we've been out to, is it Northbrook?
Yeah.
Gun Club. We've been out there a couple times to do interviews, and that's not exactly what my wife shoots. What she shoots is international trap. So it's about twice as fast, and the angles are twice as severe. So if you're not on a target in the split second, it's out of your range.
They can slow it down for us.
Yeah. They don't have that out there. They just have American trap, so it's a lot slower.
First time in history we've gone from trap plays in football to trap shooting in the Olympics. Man, we had it all covered.
They all take instant reaction to
succeed. That's true, yeah.
Yeah, no question. All right, let's take a quick time out. When we come back, we'll wrap this baby up. A lot to discuss with Mitch Unrein, our guest, the Bears defensive lineman here on Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Pick up a Chicago Bears fathead inside your Sunday Chicago Tribune exclusively at your local Jewel Osco store. You can also redeem coupons from Dr. Pepper on each fathead. Zach Zaidman, Tom Thayer, a final few moments here with Bears defensive lineman Mitch Unrein. And we've run the gamut because there's so many interesting aspects to who you are, not just as a football player, but as a person. And I want to get to that because that's important. It's not just your wife who's a terrific athlete and you, but your whole family. I mean, everyone that's named Unrein in your family played football at a high level.
Yeah.
And that's not an exaggeration, Tom.
No, I know.
Yeah, my sister, first of all, she was a three-time All-American at Northern Colorado, swimmer. And then I had two brothers that played football there. And then I actually have a relative, Terry Unrein, who played professional football back in the 80s and for San Diego. So, yeah, there's a lot of history of sports in my family. And, you know, it's pretty crazy that, you know, we've had so many college athletes and then two Unreins to play in the NFL. So it's really cool.
All right, now getting back to the last game. High expectations going into Indianapolis by the Bears fan base. Same expectations from you guys.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, we are expecting to go in there and kick some butt. I mean, we have a lot of confidence coming off this last win, and we got to stack another one and get on a roll here.
Good luck.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Mitch Unrein, it's been a pleasure. Bears defensive lineman spending an hour with us. We've got to do this again sometime soon. For Tom Thayer, our executive producer, Greg Miller, Paul Zerang, who helped us blast through the speakers of your radio, I'm Zach Zaidman saying thanks for listening to Bears All Access, brought to you by Uber on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.